On September 22nd, 1994, NBC added two shows to its popular Thursday comedy lineup. One was Madman of the People, starring Dabney Coleman, which ran for one season and was canceled. The other was Friends. Starring six mostly unknown young actors, it would run for 10 seasons, launch several careers, and become a model for a lot of other comedies, most of which would fail.
Created by Marta Kaufman and David Crane, Friends was little more than a bunch of pals who hung out, dated, and broke up with each other and a variety of guest stars, and they had unrealistically large apartments. But 25 years later, Friends is still popular in endless reruns and on Netflix. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're diving into the legacy of a quintessential piece of turn-of-the-century television today on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away. Oh!
That timing was perfect.
How did we do that?
That timing was perfect.
What even happened?
Wow.
Amazing.
Love it. Love it.
One take Holmes, they call me.
Yep.
The following message comes from our sponsor, Chipotle, working to champion young farmers like Kelsey Cruz, a hog farmer for one of Chipotle's pork suppliers, Nyman Ranch. As a sixth-generation farmer in southwest Iowa, Kelsey recognizes that the lifestyle is changing rapidly in today's urbanizing world.
You don't hear of anyone that's like, I'm going to be a farmer. Unfortunately, you have to be, in this day and age, either born into it, or you have to know someone that's going to give you that opportunity to, say, rent some ground from you or let you buy a plot of land to get yourself started on. And that's not an easy or a financially realistic task for someone who, say, is our age in their early 20s. Your food has to come from somewhere, and it has to continue coming from somewhere. I get excited telling people about how my family raises pigs, so that's near and dear and important to me.
To learn more about how Chipotle is working to champion young farmers through three-year contracts for eligible farmers under 40, go to chipotle.com/farmers.
Welcome back. You just met NPR Music's Stephen Thompson, and joining us today is the host of It's Been a Minute, Sam Sanders. Hi, Sam.
Hello, hello from sunny LA.
Absolutely. And rounding out the table, it's been too long. It is Weekend Edition Books editor Barry Hardiman. Welcome back, Barry.
Hi.
No matter how long it's been since we had you on the show, I always say it's been too long because it always
has been. Oh, that's so nice because I'm one of your favorite friends.
Absolutely. Oh. One of my favorite friends.
See what you
okay.
did there.
So what we want to talk about today, I will admit that this was partly kicked off by the fact that Sam recently discovered watching Friends, but I'm actually going to hop over.
Discovered watching Friends.
We're going to get to Sam and his many, many hot takes. But before we do that, I'm going to hop over to Stephen. Help me kind of set the table a little bit for where this show fits into the story of the 90s. I mean, this was post-Seinfeld. But
well,
it was
the beginning of Seinfeld.
Yes, yeah. Post the beginning of Seinfeld. So that was already a big part of this lineup. This is when NBC was really sort of rolling with comedies. Mm-hmm.
They had gone from Cheers and Frasier kind of into Seinfeld and Friends.
Yeah.
And, of course, Caroline in the City.
Yeah.
Hey.
And the single.
Of course.
The
single
guy. Yeah. All right. So, Stephen, what is your take on Friends? How do you look back on Friends now?
It's funny. I don't think of myself as a Friends guy, mostly because I've never gone back and rewatched it until we were preparing for this episode. The shows that I've gone back and marinated in over and over again from that era and beyond are shows like The Simpsons and 30 Rock and Parks and Rec and Arrested Development, all shows that are not filmed in front of a live studio audience.
And some of those are a little later.
Some of those are definitely later.
Especially later than the beginning of Friends.
Absolutely. Yeah. But the shows that I've looked back on fondly tend, for whatever reason, not to be Friends or really particularly Seinfeld. And so I go back and I load up Netflix and I start watching. I watch the pilot. I start hopping around to ones. I'm like, oh, I remember that's an important one. And I could practically recite them as they went along. Mm-hmm. I could not believe how thoroughly lodged in my brain every line. Chandler would say, who's up for a nice game of Kerplunk? And I'm like, wow, I remember that line completely. Yeah. So it is interesting. But then when you go back and watch it, it hasn't aged particularly well. I was 22 when Friends went on the air. This is the 25th anniversary of Friends. Do the math. I'm 47. I didn't like as many of these characters as I did when I was 22 before I learned lessons about certain character flaws.
Yeah. No, it's true. Barry, what do you think? Friends.
it is shocking. I had the same experience of like when I booted them all up. Of it was like I put on a coat and I was like, oh dear, this fits too well. I did have that same experience. I can't believe how many things have lodged themselves in my brain. I had the same feeling that I do every now and then when I hear a song from high school that's like not a particular, you know, like the Spin Doctors.
Sure.
Like Two Princes.
Third Eye Blind.
Yes. Like there are certain, and I'm like, oh, weird. I do know all of this and it feels comfortable. And I am now of an age where I have some discomfort with the comfort.
Sure.
Because I look back on it. However, we're probably going to bag on them a little bit in this, mm-hmm. in the next couple. So I'm going to start out with something positive. There is a sharpness to many of the jokes that I admire. And this is not the characters or the narrative so much. There is something about those jokes that it's like they've done the math and it's added up in this way. And I can look at it and be like, well done, mm-hmm. sir. It doesn't, there's no complication to it. There's no, the things that I admire in a more deep way, it does not have those qualities. But I also, you know, I'd be lying right now if I said I didn't giggle during this rewatch. And I don't know if I am giggling for the child that I was.
Sure.
Or I am giggling as the woman that I am. But I, you know, and I still, and I was also surprised that like many of the takes that I had back, you know, like Phoebe's the only one that's worth a damn. And
Joey's all right.
You know, Joey's okay.
He's eventually okay.
Everybody right. thinks Joey's okay.
Right. Yeah. He's okay.
Everybody like, goes through phases of being
right,
terrible.
Right, exactly. Phoebe's like, but so, you know, all the terrible people are still terrible. I did always think they were terrible, but I forgave them more. It's like I feel the same way about them that I did about that I do about like Carrie and Sex and the City.
Yeah, I get that. Mm. I totally get that.
You know, but I also still like Carrie was my friend.
Yeah,
you
sure,
know, like sure. I watched her.
Sure.
So
Sam, the time has come.
Oh boy,
I'm gonna sit back a little bit.
So Sam, I gather that you were uh-huh. not a Friends viewer when Friends was originally on.
No, I was a preteen and a teenager in the 90s. And when I was allowed to watch TV, what I wanted to watch was like the golden age of black sitcoms.
Right.
So Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Living Single,
Girlfriends, which is the original Friends. Direct ancestor of Friends.
Yeah. So for sure, I was watching that because when I would see these commercials for Friends, I'd be like, those aren't my friends. Like, they just weren't, you know?
Yeah, I know.
But this crazy thing happened this year. Netflix, which I watch a lot of, kept telling me on the home screen, you should watch Friends, you should watch Friends, you should watch Friends, in part because I think that Netflix is actually losing Friends.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's actually a business story here about why Friends is booming right now. But anyways, Netflix kept saying, Sam, watch it. So finally I did. And from the start, I didn't understand how I felt about this show. To bastardize a Chandler quote, could I be more conflicted? So this show is so confusing, for one, because the women are actually likable, but the men are actually loathable. And usually with a sitcom of a group of friends, you like them all or you hate them all. And I couldn't tell if I should like them or hate them. Like,
yeah.
Rachel is one of the most genuinely likable sitcom characters of the 90s. You know, Monica, I felt from the start that she just had some kind of undiagnosed anxiety disorder, but she's still nice.
Yeah.
I think Phoebe was secretly homeless, but I still liked her. But the dudes were awful. Ross was emotionally manipulative and mean to his friends. Chandler was too sarcastic and snarky and mean. And Joey, whatever.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing that gave me pause. Who do I like? Who do I hate? The other thing, which y'all have kind of referenced already, a lot of the jokes don't hold up because they are transphobic, mm-hmm. fatphobic, and just mean. You know, they have that neighbor across, not neighbor, but the guy across the street, they can see into his window. They spend the whole time mocking him for being fat. You know, they mock Chandler's trans parent. Yep. All of it was just mean in a way that doesn't hold up. And it was just like, I don't know. So that's all happening. But also, as I watch this show right now, I've devoured several seasons in the last few weeks. I find myself admiring the basic nuts and bolts of the sitcom that they execute mm-hmm. quite well. even if you hate these characters, they're developed really well over time, so you're vested in their stories. All of them are really good at the physical humor of a sitcom, the basic nuts and bolts they get. The joke density and pace is smart. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, big picture, I hate these people. But like on the basics of what a sitcom should do for you, they do it.
Yeah.
And given that, I cannot wrap my head around how I really feel about this show.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things for me is thinking about both the parts of it that are timeless, that I can enjoy over and over and over mm-hmm. again, and the things about it that are incredibly dated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think both from an actual quality and aspiration perspective and from a cynical perspective, you would be very unlikely to get a show now with a 6-person ensemble, all of whom were straight white people.
You can't do it.
I don't think that's how they're cast, like, even on CBS, I don't think they would cast something like this now.
Yeah.
If you look at more recent examples of kind of group of friends shows, like, you know, New Girl mm-hmm. or something like that. Happy endings, you do see that, right? But the parts of it that feel the most dated to me, and this is what one of the things Sam alluded to, is not just like the trans stuff,
right.
but the kind of like undercurrent of gay panic that runs through this show.
And you don't say. This is the thing that also confused me. So I have been tweeting up a storm about Friends and how I'm conflicted over it. And someone on Twitter said, well, actually, you should look into Emily Nussbaum's take on this show.
Yes.
And that argument is one of the writers and creators of Friends is gay himself.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole sitcom was supposed to display the absurdity of straight male gay panic in New
right.
York in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see it as that. But as a gay, it didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't clear enough
right.
that these three men being homophobic was like a wink and a nod.
Right.
To me, it was just offensive.
Right, yeah. And it's not just the gay panicky stuff. It's the gender performance parts of it.
Yeah.
The parts about, like, men being horrified by breast milk. And, like, there's all this stuff that just feels to me like presenting in a less than, you know, fully masculine way.
Oh, yeah.
It's not even just purely gay panic stuff. It's also just gender presentation humor.
Mm-hmm. That all of that is absolutely true. And what I thought, I watched one of the episodes, which is the one with the male nanny that Ross mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. continuing. It's
Freddie Prinze Jr., right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The guest cast mm-hmm. list of the is just insane.
It was amazing.
But so the male nanny episode, which is again a perfect example of like the real like gay phobia of mm-hmm. you know Ross continuing to. There's this piece at the end where what apparently they're driving toward is. This is my, you know, I'm trying to get over my own toxic masculinity.
Of course.
You could see the glimmer of what had maybe happened in the writer's room.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And therefore, like, there's this part of it that feels so much like a perfect encapsulation of a moment before the moment that we're in now. Like, it feels like a time capsule because
mm-hmm.
of that. And that in and of itself is, I have to say, I really did find fascinating because now, you know, toxic masculinity, we talk about it so much. It's the subject of Big Mouth. You know what
right.
I mean? It's like literally.
Yeah.
So it is fascinating to see.
Yeah. I don't think Emily's wrong about what they were trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure they got there. And I think when mm-hmm. you just inundate people with that message that it's funny to see
mm-hmm.
that it's funny when men fall asleep on top of each other taking a nap, like that hugging between men is like funny.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that you're getting to where they were trying to get to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
well,
sure.
and like even if you give the gay panic a pass because you assume the intention of these writers, you can't give the fat phobia a pass.
Oh, no.
They're right. just so mean to mm-hmm. fat people.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or that it's New York and they know almost exclusively white people for most of the shows run, which is
I will say this. There are a lot of white people in this world who create social circles that are
pretty much
white.
That's true.
Here's a question I have about this show compared to a show like Seinfeld. And Seinfeld's last episode famously pulls back the veil mm-hmm. and reveals, like, the show has always known that these people were rotten.
Awful.
Mm-hmm. And that becomes kind of the, you know, the final reveal on Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. Friends, I felt like we were supposed to love these people.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
this is for sure. This is the problem.
That they have foibles, yes. You know, that if they didn't have foibles, there wouldn't be the conflicts to generate a show.
Yeah, right.
But that you're ultimately supposed to root for them. You're supposed to root for the relationships. You're supposed to root mm-hmm. for Ross and Rachel, which run, Rachel.
For me.
Yeah.
Well, so, Stephen, this is why I was so conflicted, because if the couple we should care about the most and want to end up together the most is Ross and Rachel, they're unequally matched.
Yeah.
Rachel's mm-hmm. likable, and Ross is one of the worst human beings in sitcom history.
So
and
bad.
I also think that, you know, there's such a thing as being too good at demonstrating that people are not meant to date each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think as the conflicts between them developed over time and they kept having the same arguments over and over again and getting on each other's nerves in the same way, I did get to a point with this show where I was like, no, I believe you. They don't belong together.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I remember writing a piece for MSNBC where I was writing at the time about how they should not end up together.
Right.
Yeah.
But one of my arguments was, even if they have them together at the end of the show, I'm going to assume they just broke up again 2 weeks after that.
Right. Right.
I think the Chandler and Monica relationship originally was more rootable for me. Mm-hmm. But then she turned into such a harpy,
also,
and he seemed to hate her.
Can I just talk about Chandler for a second?
Mm-hmm.
Halfway through the first season, when you realize he's just kind of a D-bag who's way too snarky, way too sarcastic,
so
kind
terrible.
Of that to me felt like repressed homosexuality. And his anger about that was showing up in the extreme sarcasm.
Well, they certainly like, played with that at times.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I know men like that. The reason he's so mad is because he can't be gay.
Right.
Like, I'm
right.
sorry. That's all that I kept seeing with him.
When I think about what I love about Friends, I tend to think not about stories and not about characters. I tend to think about individual lines.
Lines.
That
sure.
always
yes.
make me laugh.
Yes.
And it's not even necessarily the writing of a great joke.
No.
Sometimes it's the they were very good
physically.
At matching the delivery of the actor with what the line was.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
a moment at the very end of the show, near the very end of the show, when Chandler and Monica are looking at a house and they learn that Janice, Chandler's ex-girlfriend, who he's gone back and forth with over much of the course of the first maybe half of the series. And so Chandler and Monica are looking at this house and they hear Janice, who's going to be their neighbor. And they hear her say, oh, my God. And the audience laughs because they realize Janice is the neighbor. And then Matthew Perry just says, sure. And I think about that delivery of sure.
Yes.
Right.
All the time. Because there are so many situations where
it's just execution.
It's not. And it's a very good display of how it really feels when something like that happens. You're like, yep, this is about what
Sounds
would happen
good.
At this moment.
Well, yeah.
Sure.
This is the thing about all six of them.
Mm-hmm.
Their comedic timing is impeccable.
Oh,
they
yes.
are
yes.
perfect sitcom actors.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really amazing. I have a question for you guys.
Uh-huh.
Tying back to this idea of why Friends is so popular right now. So back to Netflix, which I kind of mentioned earlier.
Yes, and they are losing Friends, as
They're
you mentioned, to
Friends.
HBO Max, which is the Warner Media service, is going to have it exclusively starting in 2020. Go ahead, Sam.
So, but with Friends and Netflix, turns out in 2018, when Netflix released the numbers for their top 10 programs in terms of minutes watched, the top two shows on all of Netflix were not their original shows. It was The Office and Friends.
The Office,
Yes.
Yeah.
And so there's this weird business story right now that revolves around Friends.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of all of the streaming platforms and opportunities and new content, we revert to liking the old stuff.
Yeah.
And part of me wonders why that's the case. And with Friends, I think a lot about how much Gen Z likes it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just folks our age rewatching this show. It's people in their 20s and teenagers watching it for the first time now.
Yep.
And I kept saying to myself, why do they like it? You
know,
because Gen Z is the most woke generation ever.
Yeah.
Why do they like this show?
Know. Yeah.
Like, they know it's off.
Right.
And then I said, you know what? I think what they like, and I think what I like, is that Friends is a throwback to a time when we spent more time with our friends, when people hung out together without their smartphones and just communed with each other. It is actually kind of refreshing and nice to see the six of them at Central Perk just talking.
there's no intrusion of the world, and partly there's no intrusion of the world because, like, what is there, like, there's no 9/11. There's
exactly.
No, you could smoke on
airplanes.
It's
a simpler time.
Like,
yes.
Everything is great. Mm-hmm. And,
yes.
You know, like, so even if there was going to be a Twitter intrusion, it mm-hmm. would be, it, like, wouldn't even be a thing. So there is this kind of nostalgia for, like, the complexities of the world couldn't intrude,
right.
And B, they did not feel as complex to us.
And you can see them kind of discovering things like email and computer
computer
dating, and Chandler has this computer, so very exciting because he got to bring this laptop home from work. And it's like, ooh.
There is something nice in seeing people just hang around other people that
it's
they like.
True.
I agree.
I can see that. I also think, you know, if you invest that amount of time in a show, it's nice to watch someone on TV wasting years of her life with Ross so that you don't have to.
Yeah.
All right. I want to talk to you guys about Friends for 3 hours, but unfortunately we can't. That brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Sam Sanders at Sam Sanders. You can follow Barry at B Hardiman. That's B-H-A-R-D-Y-M-O-N. Thanks to all of you guys for being here. You're my friends.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We also want to let you know that Sam is not done talking about Friends. Sam has actually another episode of him talking about Friends that you can listen to. It's an episode of his show. It's been a minute, and it's called the one where we talk about Friends. So don't miss that one. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, subscribe to our newsletter. That's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here next week.
If you want to get smart on the economy in just 10 minutes a day, try The Indicator. We use data to debunk common myths about millennials, and we look to Coachella for lessons about the global economy. That is NPR's The Indicator from Planet Money. Listen now.